Welcome to Health Connections, a show about people, health, and policy. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. In this edition, we look at the relationship between health and economics. From your household to where you work to the state of Tennessee at large, health and the economy are indeed linked in many ways. For more on this, we turn to Matt Harris. He's an economist at the Boyd Center in Knoxville, and he spoke with my colleague, Dr. Carol Myers.
Welcome, Dr. Harris. I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite some time. Thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
The question that we're going to talk about today is, does a healthy population equal a healthy economy? It's well understood, at least in my world, that as the economy of a country improves, the overall health of the country improves. We know there's a positive relationship when we bring it down to the individual level between individual health and personal and family wealth. It's called the health-wealth gradient. It's been well studied. We also know that social determinants of health, something we talk about frequently on this show, those are those factors that interact to determine one's overall health. Socioeconomic status is the most important of the social determinants of health. But we know less about the opposite, and that's why you're here today. So a good place to start as we look at the relationship between health and the economy is to first define health. And I'm referring to a lot more than merely the absence of disease. My definition is broader. Health really embodies the potential of a human being to be a productive, happy person. So, Dr. Harris, what are some of the mechanisms by which health can enhance economic growth?
One way of thinking about this is that health is a type of human capital. What we mean by that is it may be valued similar to education or to experience in the workplace. It's something else that workers bring with them to the table when they go to accomplish a job or to negotiate a salary. We know that healthier workers have lower absenteeism rates in the workplace, but also greater presenteeism rates. And that's not just the negative of absenteeism. We're talking about workers just being more engaged, more productive while they're in the seat or on their feet doing their job. Second is, at the population level, improved health can contribute to economic growth by making an area more attractive to businesses because of expected lower costs. You know, people are a large and in some cases a majority of the costs that businesses face, and the costs of insuring unhealthy workers can be quite high. Additionally, healthy workers are much less likely to be injured on the job, file for disability, or incur other events that are, while really are unfortunate for the worker, are also costly for firms. And finally, better health leads to lower disability rates and higher rates of labor force participation, which then increases the tax base and brings in additional resources for further investment and economic development.
Would you say that investments in health should be a national, state, or business priority when it comes to increasing personal income and driving economic vitality? Could you go that far based on the factors that you just described?
Yes, but the thing that I'd emphasize is that people have to be careful and patient when investing in health. We live in this world where we're accustomed to the Amazon Prime speed of delivery and instant gratification. Investments in health can lead to economic benefits and avert a catastrophic illness, such as heart attack or stroke, and can contribute to the attractiveness as a location as a place of business, but it takes a long time for reputations to change. Investing in health alone may improve economic vitality, but it's more likely to be effective if done so in conjunction with investments in education, traditional education, adult education, and other physical capital or infrastructure investments that can facilitate those gains in conjunction with health. And the challenge in all of this is effective. Economics, health, and clinical health are all still working to understand what kinds of incentives, nudges, educational programs can generate persistent behavioral change. That can be very difficult to affect.
So if you were engaged as a business consultant and part of your salary was at risk for outcomes, how would you advise a Tennessee business about investing in health based on the data that we have today?
The cop-out answer, but the one that I think is true, is that it depends on the needs of the employees in that organization. If your employees are by and large obese, you know that's going to lead to long-term health costs. That's probably affecting your insurance premia if you're, a small business and if you're out of one of the pools, et cetera. You also might have employees that are quite physically fit, but due to the high stress nature of your job, and due to other factors, there may be perhaps room to help people's mental well-being. And so when we think about health, as you pointed out earlier, it's a It's a multidimensional aspect. And if a business is going to invest in health, it probably wants to invest in the type of health that's going to improve its productivity. And that depends on what is being asked of the workers doing that job.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that one size doesn't fit all. It needs to be targeted and based on the employee workforce, you know, their profile, as well as it probably makes sense, like so many other things, to go mm-hmm. after the low-hanging fruit.
I agree with that, and I think a lot of businesses are concerned with improving the health of their employees because there's not a one-shot solution. It's not always clear sort of what those needs might be.
What is the downside to the business community and policy leaders in investing in health? If you were challenged, let's again use the consultant analogy, you've been hired mm-hmm. by a business or a group of businesses, and you've made the case for investing in health, but they say, well, what is it we should be cautious about, or what's the negative? What would you say?
The main thing to keep in mind is that everything has a trade-off. And, you know, in economics, we refer to opportunity cost. An opportunity cost is a $5 word for trade-off. It's, you know, what else could those resources be used for? And so if you're talking about, you know, a public expenditure on health, then you think about education, you think about roads, you think about, you know, improved access to sidewalks or, you know, whatever is important to you. But other resources and other uses that those dollars could be put to. A business who's deciding how much they want to invest in the wellness of their employees is going to have to weigh that against other projects that they would take on to increase profits that those resources would be put towards.
Some people say there's enough money in our system in the U.S. and other advanced democracies to pay for much better health, that we're not using our dollars wisely. Is this something you could speak to a little bit?
So most of my research and most of my work is about why individuals make the choices that they make. Mm-hmm. And as economists, that's what we do. We focus a lot more on the choices that people make, the way people allocate their time, the way that people allocate their resources, and you know, how that affects their lives and how that affects things going forward. So I think it's a fair question. You know, is the money that's currently in the system in the right places? And we spend a ton of money keeping people alive when their prospects are poor. We spend a ton on palliative care and care at the end of life. Just 5% of the population accounts for half of all medical care spending in this country. You know, I'm not sure we spend enough on primary prevention. You know, I'm not sure we spend enough on social services. I'm not sure we spend enough on helping young people develop healthier habits than their antecedents. And I think it can be easy for some people to use some of these thoughts to say, well, let's just reduce the overall spending on health. But before we do that, I think it's more of a notion of is the money that goes into the healthcare system well aligned with the long run outcomes that we want?
Yeah, it seems to me that we have the same challenge of making a business case for investing in health for economic vitality, that we're challenged with the same thing in investing in health for its own worth, is the investment in primary prevention, screening, more robust primary care. The yield is not immediately apparent, mm-hmm. but the data is there to say on the horizon it's there. So it's a real choice, do we want to make short-term investments or long-term investments?
Right.
And in today's environment, it's sometimes hard to make the argument for the long-term investments. Dr. Harris, I know that you have a fair bit of interface with the Tennessee business community, with mm-hmm. the research that you do in the College of Business and with the center, the Boyd Center for Economic and Business Research. We're seeing more and more that Americans are saying healthcare is rising to the top of issues they're concerned about. Would you say the same is true for business? Where is this on their radar screen, the cost of healthcare and issues related to health?
It's right up there at the top.
Is it?
And, you know, again, that goes back to that when you're running a business, your people, if they're not a majority or a plurality often of your cost structure, and you care about people as an input, and poor health is a threat to their productivity, whereas good health is additional vigor and an augment to productivity. While at certain times different concerns may supersede health, you know, for all of the firms we've talked to, I don't think there's any major employer in the Knoxville area that's not keeping an eye on their people's health as a long-term source of capital and then strategic value to the organization.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to ask you a question more from a maybe an equity or more of an idealistic point of view, maybe more of a nursing perspective,
okay,
that health in of itself is a value, even if it's not an economic driver, in that it has intrinsic value. How far would I get with that argument with business folks or state government?
My thought is I want to try to have conversations with people in terms that we can both meet in the middle on. And so if, you know, when you consider the perspective of a policymaker, one of the things that the policymaker has to say is, you know, I have this amount of resources, I have this mm-hmm. amount of dollars, and how do we allocate those dollars to make the state the best off? And so when we do talk to policymakers or we talk to business people, economic impact or return on investment is just, it's a part of that conversation, mm-hmm. Just because that is the metric often that is, well, at least is one of the metrics that gets used to determine, you know, what needs to happen to those resources and how can we take the state, how can we best move the state or move the business forward. So, I mean, if you take the stance, though, that health is a goal in and of itself, that goal will yield economic benefits.
So there's opportunity to meet in the middle with folks with very diverse perspectives, and even though we may come from different places, we may be able to land at the same place when it comes to looking at health and economic vitality of our state and country.
And as an economist, that's the way that we tend to think about policy, is sort of, if you pull this handle, if you affect this change, then based upon the best available data and methods that we have, here's what we think is going to happen. And policymakers make policy, business people make business decisions, but we try to inform that to the best of our ability.
So, Dr. Harris, it has been a great pleasure. I always enjoy talking to you, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Dr. Myers, for having me. It's been a privilege.